This episode is sponsored by TransUnion's True Audience Credit Informed Marketing Solutions. Optimize your credit marketing strategy and drive ROI with solutions that improve targeting, addressability, and engagement in any channel. Visit transunion.com/creditinformedmarketing to learn more today.
All these things that companies can use AI for that could have some really negative impacts from the customer perspective, those are becoming much more prevalent as companies in reality or in perception are saying that I am now using AI. And that's why the CFPB and all these other government agencies are moving so quickly to regulate the space.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Banking and Payments Show, a Behind the Numbers podcast from eMarketer. Today is May 16th. I'm Rob Rubin, GM of Financial Services, and your host today. If you enjoy this podcast, please give us a five-star rating and subscribe. The title of today's episode, Will Generative AI Save Banks? And I invited back Head of Financial Services Research, Eleni Digalocki, and Banking and Payment Show veteran, Dan Van Dyke, VP of Content Strategy at Insider Intelligence, and our point person on all things generative AI. Hi, Eleni. How you doing?
Hi, Rob.
Hey, Dan. How you doing? So happy to have you here today.
Hey, Rob. Doing well. Thanks for having me back.
Yes, nice to have you back, Dan. You know, Dan, before we get into it, we introduced quickfire sessions maybe four or five episodes ago, and I realized that you haven't actually done it.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
Who has the top spot for these podcasts at this point? Is it Eleni? Is it Tiffany? Yeah. Is it me?
I think it's between Eleni and Tiffany.
Man. Okay.
All right. We'll have you back more.
Well, so what is it?
So the first one is, where do you live?
Brooklyn. Williamsburg, Brooklyn.
All right. Have you ever had a good experience with a chatbot?
It's a hard one. So if we're calling ChatGPT a chatbot, absolutely. If we're talking about chatbots like IVRs, like calling your bank, sometimes. So I found one that pointed out that a gym was double charging me, and I thought that was pretty cool. So I'll say yes, but the majority of time, it's a negative experience.
Yeah, for now. And why is ChatGPT bad at math?
That's a great question. A lot of people talk about ChatGPT like it's supercharged T9. So remembering back in the days when you were texting and it would sort of autocomplete, there still is that technology today. ChatGPT's basic reasoning engine sits on top of predicting the next word in a sequence of words. And so that optimizes it for things that have to do with like grammar and language. It means that functions like math that are super rigid and where there is one correct answer really doesn't lend itself to what ChatGPT does best. And that's why it's bad at math.
Oh, it sounds like if it needs more than one answer, it'll be good at politics. Here's an oddball question, but you know that I like to collect data points.
Yeah.
Do you prefer to eat cake with a fork or a spoon?
I really want to see the spreadsheet where you collect these data points. So I prefer to eat cake with a fork, unless it has ice cream with it, and then I'm definitely a spoon guy.
There you go. I'm with you. It depends on what kind of cake.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, that was fun, and we have a ton to cover, so let's get right to the headlines. In the headlines, we chat about a top story as it relates to our episode. For the headline today, I want to go back to an article we published May 3rd. CFPB and regulators unite to tackle AI oversight. Talks about a joint statement put out by the CFPB and the FTC and the Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Department of Justice and the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. The U.S. regulators' joint approach shows the scale of AI's impact on financial services and other industries, the potential problems it poses, and the speed with which watchdogs are really grappling with introducing stronger oversight. So my first question is really, why the urgency?
That's a great question. And I think one phrase that stood out to me from the press release speaks to the why behind the urgency, which is that they use the specific phrasing of companies that market themselves as using AI. And what is the significance of that? It's that every company, it seems like overnight, has some sort of AI product or are claiming that AI is behind their product. And that can be a smokescreen for a lot of tactics or a lot of practices that are anti-consumer. grammar. So some specific examples of those that were called out were the black box algorithms that are behind a lot of like credit decisions, things like dark patterns. So if you've ever tried to sign up for a service and then suddenly you find that you've signed up for a couple of auxiliary services, that might be what's known as a dark pattern. But all these things that companies can use AI for that could have some really negative impacts from the customer perspective, those are becoming much more prevalent as companies in reality or in perception are saying that I am now using AI. And that's why the CFPB and all these other government agencies are moving so quickly to regulate the space.
So I totally agree with Dan. The risks are significant, both when it comes to abusing the tech, but biases, misinformation, or all the things ChatGPT is known to not be getting it quite right. But also the tech is developing faster than many other technologies have in the past, like smartphones. So they need to be moving fast on this, and they're aware. The difference between ChatGPT 4 and ChatGPT 3.5 is mind-blowing. So, you know, it's really moving very rapidly. But I'll also say that moving fast is as important to regulators as it is to banks. A lot of banks won't touch any of the more sensitive use cases until they get more clarity from the regulator. So I see that as good news for the industry, especially right now with all those failures we've seen with banks. Financial institutions don't want to jeopardize consumer trust. People are just ready to change a bank, you know, in no time if they get a red signal.
Right.
I think moving fast is important.
Lenny, you brought up such an important point that the scale at which AI is developing is so unprecedented. And as an example of that, I actually wrote my first report on AI and banking and payments when I joined this company. And that was in 2017. And since then, Moore's Law for natural language processing is that the scale of large language models, so think like ChatGPT, the size of them has 10x every year. Yeah. And that means that when I wrote about AI and banking and payments, models then were 1/1,000,000th of the size that they are currently, which is just incredible in putting in perspective how quickly this has really developed. If it feels overnight, it's because it really has 10x just over the past year.
Clearly, generative AI is equal parts scary and exciting. And the thing that I think we're talking about here is the criminals seem to be as excited as everyone else about the potential, which is why the regulators are paying attention. And hopefully that's why the banks are waiting for the regulators before they jump right into it. In our next segment, Story by Numbers, let's look at the upside of generative AI, digging into some of the early use cases. In Story by Numbers, we pick a number or two that helps us dig into the episode's topic. And today for Story by Numbers, the first number that I want to focus on is 65%. And that's the percentage of executives surveyed that believe generative AI will have a big impact on their organization in the next 3 to 5 years. This was a KPMG survey data point, which was cited in a Wall Street Journal article from May 2nd, Goldman Sachs CIO tests generative AI. We will put a link in the show notes. You know, for both of you, the thing that stands out to me is that 65% of executives don't know how fast generative AI is coming. 3 to 5 years seems overly conservative to me. Do you agree with that?
I do. You know, there's that often repeated adage that people tend to overestimate what can be achieved in the next 2 years and underestimate what can be achieved in the next 10. I think all that logic sort of goes out the window when you're talking about being pegged to the growth curve that we just described, Moore's Law for NLP, which is that the models are 10xing every year. And so I feel like the impacts are already being felt. If you look at a lot of companies saying that they're actively piloting the tech, you have IBM saying that it's going to shift its hiring practices to account for where it sees the technology going. This is happening right now. It's not a theoretical thing that will happen over the next 3 to 5 years. But Eleni, what's your take?
Yeah, I don't disagree, but I'm also thinking of the word like big impact there. I think many banks are already experimenting with the technology. They're doing a number of pilots. But from that to having a big and significant impact at the organization level, it does require some time. 5 years is definitely off, though. I think it's going to be much faster.
Maybe 2 to 3, because also what could be a big impact might not necessarily be what faces their customers, right? It could be some of the things that they're doing behind the scenes that really streamline some of their processes. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that.
So to me, those are the things that we might see as impactful. Some of the things which I think are scary are credit decisioning, providing any kind of guidance or advice using AI. That might take more time. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I agree. And I think ChatGPT could very well take chatbots and personalized recommendations to the next level. But it goes back to that clarity and sort of having the regulatory guardrails needed to move in that direction. They might not be allowed to give recommendations using AI at all. But I think there's a lot of opportunity, for example, there to have those chatbots, those tools face the employees internally and help them with their recommendations and personalizing service on the background.
Let's sort of pivot to this sort of front end. And I want to use for my second number, I'm going to use a number which is basically a banking myth, I think, because it's been around forever. And it's old. I knew about it, but I think it was a Deloitte study, but it might not have been because, and I'm just saying this because I don't know the source, but it's a number. And it's that the cost of a bank customer service call with a human is $4. And the cost of a conversational bot is 10 to 15 cents a call. So now you know why it's hard to speak to a human. Based on our mobile banking benchmark surveys, bank chatbots to date haven't even been close to comparing to a human experience. So when do you think generative AI is going to help banks deliver a human quality customer service experience at a fraction of the cost of an actual human?
That's a great question. And first, speak to that stat that you cited. I used to work at this company, Javelin, and we had almost that exact same stat, but it was about mobile banking for depositing a check versus using a customer service support rep. So my guardrails immediately went up when I heard that stat. But anyways, getting back to your question, when is it going to reach the level of support that you get from a human? Well, I think a human can do a few things. Like one is they can understand the meaning behind what you're asking. And second is they can take action. Mm-hmm. So for that first portion, helping to understand the meaning, I think that we can see a pretty significant impact over a short period of time. So an example of that would be like a chatbot like offered by Capital One has to think about what are the thousands of ways that you could ask for a balance if you're a bank customer. And now ChatGPT can help figure out how to code in all those different ways that a customer might ask for something that simple. And think about that across every different feature. So it can help take a query, point you to the feature. When it comes to like actually executing complex things or taking action on your behalf, that's where I think we'll need a lot of guardrails in place to make sure that architecture like ChatGPT is actually not used for that because it's a little bit too creative. It's a little bit too unhinged in some cases. If you look at some of the conversations that Bard or Bing have had with different reporters, it's really not appropriate to be customer facing.
Right. At least now.
Yeah, at least for now. And the more powerful use cases will be, as Eleni mentioned, employee facing. So it still might positively impact the customer experience, but there has to be a guardrail of a human for now, where hallucinations, misinformation, potential algorithmic bias are still major problems with this technology, despite its sky-high potential.
And also, I think that, you know, part of it is how well is it trained?
Yeah. That's a good point.
So banks' ability to train it to handle all these things. You mentioned Capital One. Capital One's a big bank, and we're going to talk about this sort of next. But training it for all these scenarios is a challenge, no?
Huge challenge. And what Bloomberg did, I think, is really exciting. So Bloomberg released its own transformer model. It trains on a data set that it had, which is designed specifically for financial tasks. I think the potential to release models that are fine-tuned, optimized, trained all for these tasks can have a really transformative impact in terms of improving the quality of tools that are customer-facing. But that's a little bit further off into the future.
Yeah, it is a challenge, but it's also the direction banks should be taking because by limiting the pool of training documentation available to a chatbot, you can ensure greater accuracy and you solve for some of the problems with ChatGPT's great imagination.
Okay. You know, in our report on generative AI in banking, we covered 9 different bank use cases for generative AI, but today we really only had a chance to cover a few with great potential, but also obviously not with some unforeseen challenges like training, for example, and proper training and making sure that the agent isn't making stuff up. In our final segment, for argument's sake, we're going to argue nicely about whether generative AI raises the bar or levels the playing field for small banks and credit unions and regional banks. And for background, a few episodes ago, I posited that within 10 years, 95% of banks and credit unions today will cease to exist. And my perspective is that smaller institutions won't be able to keep up with consumers' expectations for digital experiences. So for this segment, I'm going to just throw out this question and we can have a three-way conversation about it. How can generative AI help level the playing field for small institutions?
I think theoretically, it makes it easier. There's a lot of discussion around how ChatGPT and generative AI sort of democratizes the technology and how it's accessible to small and larger players alike. So, you know, tech-wise, it's definitely easier. To me, culturally, it is a massive shift. It's not going to be easy. And I'm also thinking about it more broadly when I look at existing AI use cases, not limiting it to generative AI. When it comes to community banks, you see a minority of them have deployed AI. The majority might be planning to do. The picture is the opposite when you look at big banks. So in my mind, there's no good reason why the existing AI gap wouldn't be maintained when it comes to generative AI. And I think one could argue even that it will increase because the rapid advancement of the generative AI tech offers more opportunities to the people that are actually already ahead.
Eleni, you raised the issue of training and the challenges. And I think that that's ultimately going to be hard because I don't think that banks are very good today at leveraging their first party data to begin with. And I think it's all over the map and unorganized relatively. So for smaller banks, for banks that aren't the biggest ones, it might be really hard. However, on the other side of the equation, they could take advantage of fintechs who might be able to bring this capability in. Dan, do you think that that's their saving grace, is to work with fintechs?
Yeah, I think that's one of them. I think underlying too, the unit economics for a small bank, thanks to Durbin, are a little bit advantageous. And if you imagine a future where technology as a moat becomes less important, with big banks or banks in general in the US spend about $88 billion a year on internal and client-facing technology. And what if generative AI was able to level the playing field in terms of being able to stand up incredible client-facing experiences with less resources? I think that then what big banks and small banks compete on is the financials. And we're already seeing pressure on the margins with companies like Apple in partnership with Goldman Sachs, offering incredible savings rates relative to like big banks. I think smaller institutions will be able to capture more interchange, can be able to rely on that underlying unit economics benefit to stand up to bigger banks and to be able to partner with fintechs to offer better client-facing interactions and solutions. And I'm excited to see that play out. It won't be all small banks capturing the lead over the big banks, but I think you will see some examples of smaller banks punching outside of their weight class by using generative AI to accelerate their technology offerings.
I wonder if we're going to see a tech company emerge that buys a small bank and is really good at it. In other words, creates an experience, which is one that people remember, one that people strive to have. And that's the challenge that I have with smaller institutions, is they're not generally good at building these digital experiences. And while I see the advantages from a programming capability, is they can leverage a tool to develop for them as opposed to humans having to do it. But at the same time, I don't see how these smaller institutions are going to be able to pivot their cultures to being more digital. Is there opportunity for a small institution to break through as opposed to can smaller institutions survive? Is there opportunity here for smaller institutions to break through and actually have an impact?
I think yes, because as we said, the tech does level the playing field. So the sort of potential is there. I think it's going to be bad news for the majority of community banks, but yes, there is opportunity for those that act smart. I agree, partnering with fintechs will probably be a very smart way to go about it, for example, to break through. And I also think it's important to maintain the advantages that they have as they go about doing it, because yes, maybe they're not known for offering the best digital experiences, but they are known for understanding what their communities need and sort of being ingrained into these communities. So how do you bring those two things together?
So I think if I was to sum this up, I still think everybody still agrees with me that in 10 years, 95% of the banks that exist today might still be gone. And I want to point out there are 10,000 banks and credit unions in the U.S. So when I say 95%, I still think there's 500 banks in the U.S. in 10 years. That's a lot. I mean, if you look at how many banks are in the U.K. or savings societies, not very many, right?
Yeah, it doesn't compare. It's a much more concentrated market in the UK.
Right. And it's been concentrating for years already. So that law of things sort of compounding 10x each year, I think might apply to the rate which banks go away. And I think it has a lot to do with technology, not necessarily AI, but the writing's been on the wall for a while. I want to say, though, again, I think that there's this opportunity for a breakthrough, and some of these smaller institutions will break through and really, I think, put pressure on some of the bigger institutions to start to deliver some better experiences as well. So we'll see what's going to go on. I want to first say thank you to Dan and Eleni for joining us today. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Rob. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I hope, Dan, that we can have you back more and more as time goes on.
Would love to.
I want to thank everyone for listening to the Banking and Payment Show, an eMarketer podcast sponsored by TransUnion's True Audience Credit and Forum Marketing Solutions. I want to thank our editor, Todd. In today's episode, we referenced our new report on generative AI and FinServ, an article about regulators jumping in, and a Wall Street Journal article about how Goldman is already in front on leveraging generative AI. We put links in the show notes. Our next episode is on May 30th, and you'll not want to miss it. See you then.